This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters Reporters.
Presented by Burger King. Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Why would I listen to anybody else?
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Burger King, American Express, Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we start with Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King here with breaking news. I have just learned that John Osher is not a Star Wars guy. That's the breaking news that nobody else... You don't like Star Wars?
I don't get it.
So you got the Force, and you got the Father and the Son.
I saw them all. I saw the first one, or whatever episode it was. One of those Roman numerals that came out in 78.
That would be episode four.
I saw it in the theater twice, and how about I was fine with it.
Did you like Spaceball?
I think I saw it once on cable.
No.
I was never a science fiction guy. And I get that Star Wars is the thing for people of my generation. My kid likes it. Just wasn't my thing.
I like your kid a lot more than I like you.
Many people agree.
40-some-year-old man could not like Star Wars.
I'm not saying I'm a likable person. In your
defense, you never have.
Right. So Star Wars was just never my thing. Not a Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings guy either, if that loops me into some sort of genre.
Well, the different thing is that you've got, Star Wars from, how old were you when it came out?
I was in the seventh grade.
Yeah, so that's right in the sweet spot of that.
And I was a big nerd. I'm not going
to... Oh, I know. So, you don't have to sell me on that.
So you would think it'd be right at my alley.
This is why I'm shocked.
But it just never clicked.
What did you nerd out on at that age?
Just about everything else.
Oh, all right.
Anything else that would qualify you as a nerd, I was...
Dungeons and Dragons?
I was first in line.
That would be sort of in the sci-fi fantasy kind of realm.
Yeah, it just never clicked. And
spend a lot of time in the basement with the Atari.
I was a big video games guy.
Yeah, all right,
but more of a sports video games guy.
All right, so you were playing the football with the three guys.
Oh yeah.
All right, I'll show you a T-shirt.
Me and my friend David Barksdale play that all the time.
Yeah, Barksdale. I don't even want to get into that. All right, we actually do have some news that we'll get in here. A report of news actually. It has not been made official from the team, but. Reports floating all over the place of Mike Thomas being traded to the Lions. Interesting for a couple of reasons, if true, not the least of which being that it's the Lions, and, the Jaguars play the Lions this weekend. The other thing that the Jaguars would trade Mike Thomas and get some value for him, apparently.
Yeah, and we have confirmed that on the website.
So okay.
It's there.
What website is that again?
Jaguars.com. It is not StarWars.com. It's
okay.
Jaguars.com.
But
obviously they wanted to get something for a guy who was not contributing at receiver or at returner at this point. And, I don't doubt that had Mike stayed the rest of the season, that had somebody gotten hurt, he's a perfectly capable guy to come in and step in. But he was, Cecil Shorts had passed him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He was not going to play with Justin Blackmon when Robinson gets back. So it became a situation where they thought they could get something for him.
Yeah. And,
I would guess, knowing Mike, he's a prideful guy. He's had success before. So you would think he would be warm to it because he wants to play. You want to be on the field. And I'm not sure that they knew or he knew what his role was here anymore.
And the Lions are down a little bit in terms of wide receivers. Nate Burleson is banged up. Calvin Johnson's playing with a knee injury, so they've got a couple areas that need some help. That may be one of them. So also interesting, by the way, that you're talking about the swap of or a trade here involving Gene Smith and the Lions, and of course the Lions' assistant general manager
right. Is
Shaq Harris.
Well. And it happens like that. When you know people, it's just like any other walk of life. When you know people, it becomes a little easier to deal with them. You trust them. You know what they're about. So that may have played in a little bit to it. But it strikes you that the Lions figured they had a need and they could use a third or fourth guy, wherever Mike fits in. And I'm not sure what the draft pick is, as he's traded for what everybody's traded for, which is the quote unquote undisclosed draft pick. And so if they get a pick out of it next year who can contribute, make you younger for a guy who
had been surpassed by what they brought in. Yeah,
didn't really have a role, left. He wasn't returning kicks. He was not playing very much in the offense. So, in that sense, makes some sense.
One of the things that I'm going to point out, it's funny sometimes to hear how these things are delivered to the hometown. This is from M Live, Michigan Live, which is a big news site up there in
Detroit. They're getting a guy, aren't they? They are getting some help.
Let me tell you this. Let me just quote it. Thomas works primarily out of the slot. He can be a downfield threat or pick up yardage after the catch, working short routes underneath. He's also considered an exceptional blocker despite his smaller frame. Thomas has been the Jaguars' primary punt returner the past four seasons, averaged better than 10 yards per return, including a 78-yard touchdown in 2010. He hasn't been used on kickoffs much since his rookie year in 2009. So that's...
Yeah, he's the guy. So no, and all kidding aside, a lot of times it changed three. Mike has shown in the past he had 800 yards receiving in 2010.
Yep, right.
So I don't think anybody ever thought that Mike was a guy devoid of talent. And sometimes a change of scenery, it might work. And Mike's a good guy. Let's hope he has success.
Yeah, I just – he never seemed to really fit with what was going on here this year with this group.
And it was odd. Everybody who saw training camp thought that. Everybody who saw it in the off season, when you watched the workouts, you thought, boys, it's just not – maybe it's not clicking. And then in the preseason, it really, really worked. I mean, he had some timing with Gabbert. Mm-hmm. He was coming across on that crossing pattern. And I really thought going into the season that he was going to be part of maybe three or four receivers who could really get some production. And it just never happened in the regular season. Yeah. And over time, it became clear that there really wasn't a role.
And it may be true, this is going forward, it may be true that the that with my – with not just with this situation, with any, we need to remember, just because it happens in a preseason game,
sure,
don't weigh more than you've seen on the practice field, because that has equal in terms of decision making. And then, of course, ultimately, it's what happens during the regular season and to get through the postseason.
And it may be that he it may be that he never meshed with Blaine, different style quarterback, because he had a lot of success with David, and I never saw those teams, but. In 2010, Mike was very productive. He had 65 receptions, so it just never happened after that.
And one most memorable reception made by Mike Thomas. When you say Mike Thomas and think of his tenure with the Jaguars, there's one play that sticks out.
Just in time. David shuffles his feet, turns and launches this one in the direction of Mike Sims-Walker, and this one's going to be batted and caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? It was batted back into the arms of Mike Thomas, and the Jaguars have won it! Holy cow!
How did that happen?
That's unbelievable! Mike Sims-Walker batted it back! Oh! Hail Mary!
So there it is.
Did the Jaguars win that game?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that was a good play for the Jaguars or not. No, that, of course...
Or somebody brought Brian some food. One of the two.
It's got to be one of the top four or five... most memorable plays in Jaguars history.
Sure. And it's important, to remember Mike that way.
He's not dead.
Right. No, I mean, but as a fan.
I'll always remember him as the guy.
As a fan, though, you do attach yourself to these guys. And when they go, these guys matter to people. And it's, he had some good moments here.
All right, so that's the news, breaking news today. I want to start with that. When we come back, we'll get three burning questions in. Also still to come, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, about what you may not know coming out of Sunday's game. We'll talk about the impact of that game on Sunday in Green Bay is going to have on this Jaguars team and the season going forward. You can join Blaine Gabbert, captain of the third annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk and 1 mile fun run, on November 10th at Everbank Field. To support the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation, register as a team for only $15 per person at McKenziesRun.org. And you can pick up your Denny's Playmaker card at participating Denny's locations Learn how you can win a Mega Jaguars fan experience at the December 23rd home game. No purchase is necessary. We're back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. You can join the conversation at 355-6351, 355-NFL1, or you can tweet to either myself at Cole Pepper or to John at John Osher. Back with more right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Here on a Tuesday evening, Cole Pepper, John Osher, come to you from Jaguars Central. You could be driving a brand new Kia Optima by registering to win Conn's Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win. Injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. Injuries at this point, still waiting to see if LaRon Robinson will get back on the field. He did clear the concussion test, but did not play last week. Dwight Lowry and Maurice Jones-Drew are both out again this week. Montel Owens with a shoulder, we'll see. Rasheen Mathis and Derek Cox are also decisions to be made this week. Rasheen was close. He was actually active, was not made inactive. Could have played in an emergency, according to Mike Mularkey last week, but other guys played pretty well around him. And, of course, not having Greg Jennings or Jordy Nelson in there helped that.
Sure.
For the Packers. With Calvin Johnson coming to town, Jaguars really need to get Derek Cox back on the field.
I would like to see Derek Cox on the field.
Yes, you would.
Against that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, I think we give credit where it's due. I thought the secondary, if you had told me going into that game they weren't going to have Rasheen and especially weren't going to have Derek, and they were going to hold anybody with Aaron Rodgers on the other side the way they did,
one regular starter in the starting lineup?
Right. I wouldn't have believed it. And you say, yeah, they were playing with their backups, but the Packers are a good passing offense that can function. So credit to the secondary.
All right, let's get into it. Usually we start at first segment, but because of breaking news, two bits of breaking news there, let's get to it now.
And now, three burning questions.
These three burning questions presented by Joe Fortunato.
All right, guys, how significant a step forward was Blaine Gabbert's game on Sunday?
Well, it's very significant if it's part of something. I mean, if it's just that game, then it's insignificant. But if he continues, you know, the thing that makes you excited about it, if you're pulling for the guy, is that he played very well before he got hurt the previous week.
Mm-hmm.
And then he follows that with playing, you know, his best game this last week. Now, he hasn't done it for 21 games. He's done it for a game and a quarter and a half. But you saw things that you liked in terms of him looking off receivers, in terms of him moving around a little bit in the pocket, and then still having his eyes downfield to make plays. He was throwing the ball to receivers coming out of breaks. I mean, you know, he's not a top 10 quarterback in the league, but that's a step that you needed to see happen. Now, what happens next, we don't know, but you needed to see that step first.
And he also played, you know, sort of like he did against Minnesota when we thought, all right, here he comes,
mm-hmm.
right? So we now have roughly two games plus two and a half games, let's call it, just, you know, or two games plus a quarter with the Oakland game, where he's played very well. And I find it interesting that in those games, Rashad Jennings has been the running back, Maurice Jones-Drew has not. We can get into that a little bit later on. But when the burden has been placed more on him to lead it, he's done it. So that's a real positive. But I won't say that if he doesn't have another big performance this week that it'll be all but forgotten. But it has to go, again, this is all about, just think about it's like tracking a stock.
Mm-hmm.
Is it on the way up? Is it rising? And at what point does it level off? And if it levels off this year, you know, that's a bad sign. If it continues to rise, it doesn't mean every single game he's better than the previous. But in the trend, if he's rising, it's good. And you can't have a rising trend without having some games like that.
Well, what you want to see, obviously, is I don't care about the numbers. It was nice that he got to 300. Because you can finally stop people saying, well, he's never had a 300-yard game. But it wasn't the 300 yards. If he had stopped at 280, it was still that you saw things that were good. You saw, again, him doing NFL starter-type things. And I thought the most significant thing was he played well for a stretch, which we had all seen before. And in the third quarter, the offense stalled and was bad. Before, when that happened, far more often than not, it was a downward spiral, and it was awful. Well, the other day, you know, he threw the little pass to Rashad that got him going again. Then he threw a deep one to Cecil Shorts. After a stall, he got him back going again. He only got 3 points, but in the fourth quarter of that game, you didn't have this feeling of the Jaguars are going to get the ball and punt.
Right.
You got the feeling that he can put something together. That's significant that he pulled himself out of a bad spot.
And if Justin Blackmon gets the toe down, it may be a whole different story, among other things, you know, in that fourth quarter in terms of seeing how the progress was.
Yeah,
going.
I mean, you know, and
because that throw was right where you
we
want.
We can talk about it later, but the drops. I mean, yeah. He would have had ifs and buts or whatever, but he could have had a much bigger game without the drops, and they possibly even could have won.
All right, question two. Why did Han, Luke, and Chewbacca destroy all the electronics in the detention area?
No. That's different burning questions. John won't have an answer to that.
I haven't seen Lord of the Rings.
Boring conversation anyway.
Correct answer, by the way, is to cover their escape. All right. Is the defense, quote, back, end
no,
quote?
It's not all the way back, but it is on the way back. This is when you call your wife and you say, are you coming back? No, I'm on my way. And it's not the I'm on my way as in I'm going to have two more, then get in the car and I'll see you. It's this is, yeah, I'm on the road, I'm on the way back, we're coming back this way.
I always just say, more stop sodas. Bothering me.
You say that to me. I mean, that's a whole different thing. This is
I want to know which one of your wives asked you if you're coming back.
Are you on your way? Are you on your way? Are you getting back here?
My wife just hoping I say no.
So the might not be alone in that feeling. The they're on their way because they've shown again almost in lockstep with Gabbert's progress is the defense, and I don't think that's entirely a coincidence. There are some things that have happened there. Getting more guys back on the defensive front has helped. They're not back to being a top six defense or a top five defense like they were gunning to be. But you can see now, if they can not lose more guys for the season health-wise, I think they can be back by the time, you know, in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think it's very significant that this upswing has happened with Austin Lane and George Selly back. And people say, oh, you know, they're not pass rushers. What are they? Well, they've played very well against the run. And that has helped them get that run to where they're not always worried about it. They're not always in second and six and then third and one and then, you know, while the offense has every option available. They've played much better against the run. They've had some ability to rotate guys, which has helped the pass rush be better. The pass rush is not, you know the 86 Bears or the 85 Bears or either one of them, but it's been better. And I do think in the last couple of weeks, this defense has looked very similar to last year's defense because that's what this defense is. It's because it doesn't have a 15-sack kind of pass rusher, it's not going to be the kind of defense that necessarily creates turnovers going the other way every week. But it was good last year, and it's good right now.
All right, final question. Why can't the Jaguars put two halves of good football together?
Part of it's youth, I think. Part of it's, injuries. And part of it's just that they need to play better, and they need to keep it going.
Yeah, that's what you're working toward. I mean, if I could answer that question, I don't know what Mike makes, but I'd be making it. So, I mean, that's
You could then afford.
That's
to
the
have,
million-dollar question.
You could buy the entire Star Wars DVD set, if, Blu-ray, and everything.
If they could do well, what they do well in spots consistently, they would be winning.
All right, so let's hear before we take a break here. Let's hear from the general manager Gene Smith about what you maybe don't know coming out of Sunday's game in Green Bay.
How well the defense played. I know you saw a very aggressive, attacking defense that, to me, tackled as well in this game as any game this year. So they put back-to-back games together. But overall, just statistically, they held Green Bay to 238 yards, 172 net yards passing. So just an outstanding effort against an explosive offense.
All right, that's the general manager, Gene Smith. More to come, including your calls and tweets. Tweet to John at John Osher and to myself at Cole Pepper or call 355-NFL1. Get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during Truck Month at your local Southern Ford dealers. And a reminder that if you're getting ready for the game this weekend, check out a couple of great game day specials from Sonny's. Game Day Wings, 40 wings with their new dry rub or sweeter mild sauce, just $19.99. You can pick that up on your way to the stadium. Also, Sonny's Tailgate Package, a feast for 4 to 6 people with a choice of barbecue, pork, beef, chicken, or ribs. three sidekicks, garlic bread, or cornbread, and four soft drinks or fresh brewed iced tea for just $39.99. Takeout only, Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. Back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado, the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today. Proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Mularkey said it on Monday at his press conference.
It's all there. We got to find a way. You guys see it yourself, and you're as tired of me saying it to you as I am telling you. I mean, it's just at some point, this thing, we keep missing the layups or kicking it out of bounds by this much or the drops or the things that are not allowing us to win these games when we have chances. It's got to stop.
Kind of goes to your point, John, that you've been making for a while about when people say this is the worst team ever. They're not that far off from, I mean, really, you can find two or three plays. If they would have made them, they could have beaten the Packers in Lambeau, and terrible teams don't do that.
Well, I can speak to this because I missed a lot of layups. So I know it when I see it. Yeah, the plays are right there. The other day, when you've got eight or nine drops, when you fumble an interception like they did against Cincinnati, you know, fans get really, really irritated when I talk about them being a couple of plays away from three and four. And I get that. But if you think about it right now, you know, so much of the early season for every team is just a matter of getting through the first part of the season where you're still sort of in it and figure out what you are. Can you imagine?
Particularly this year with everybody bunched to the middle.
Well, and, you know, there are cases like the 49ers last year where a new coach comes in and it's just there and it's off and running, boy. But usually there's, you know, a time of adjustment, a time of weirdness. Well, can you imagine the conversation right now? Had they won in overtime in Minnesota, a won in overtime in Oakland, and they were going into the Lions game 3-4 after they played pretty well against Green Bay, you would be saying, they win these two games in the next 5 days, which if you were 3-4 would look very winnable.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you'd have a different conversation. Now, believe me, you are what your record says you are, and I get that. But that's sort of how close it can be, and that's why you can't leave wins on the table the way they did.
All right, let's get to some of these tweets and Facebook comments here.
By the way, all of our social media questions, be they Twitter or Facebook, brought to you by CopyFacts. Here's one that's kind of all over. It's from Jason, who says, I've always heard that you cannot coach a player to catch the ball. If this is true, we're in trouble.
I don't think that's true at all. I mean, you absolutely can coach a player to catch the ball. One of the things that is happening here, you have to diagnose the reason for a guy not catching. I think there's only so much you can do to improve a guy who's got bad hands. If a guy has decent or good hands and is in a catching slump, we saw this last year with Mercedes Lewis. He was in he was thinking about it too much. He's come back this year, and you haven't seen signs of him struggling to catch the football. Part of what sometimes is the drops have to do with focus. Sometimes it has to do with the guy's thinking too much about the route or about making it whatever it is. There are a lot of those different things that can go into it. Sometimes guys just don't have good hands. I don't think that's the case. You know, Justin Blackmon, Rashad Jennings has good hands. He dropped a couple the other day. These guys can catch the football. Mm-hmm. I think what's pervasive right now, and Mularkey kind of started to go down this pathway at the press conference yesterday. There are guys who really want to make the big play. They're trying, and it's the old trying to do too much thing. And
well, I think he went pretty far down the path.
Yeah.
I mean, he's – Mike's not an excuse maker, so he's not going to sit there and say, this is, you know, this is what it is, this is why. But he made a good point. This team really wants to win. They really want to make plays. And the other day, they knew they were close. And he talked about being where you white out everything else, I think, was, you know, what was the phrase you used. And you've just got to concentrate on the ball and not worry about, you know, getting hit or stepping out of bounds or what's going to happen next. And I think there's something to that. It's this is a team that feels like it's close. They want to win. They want to have success. And you start pressing a little bit. You know, just like if you're in the World Series and you haven't gotten a hit, and all of a sudden that ball looks really small.
Here's a tweet from Lance who says, do you think the shorts could be this year's Victor Cruz? As in, no one saw this kind of success coming from a no-name guy. Well, I don't know if nobody saw this. There was somebody who kept saying over and over again, hey, this guy can play, but I don't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was. But he
has seen Star Wars before, however.
There are some similarities, and the thing that people have to remember that is very hard to see in the offseason, it's very hard when you see a guy go through struggles, and Cecil at times was lost last year. I mean,
yep.
I'm not going to sit here and say just because I wrote in training camp that I thought he'd be the best receiver on the roster that I was sitting there in November going, I was right. I mean, you know, it didn't look good. But a lot of times, especially with first-year players, they need an off season. They need to get things calmed down. They need to learn how to work, how to study, how to know what's important. And it's hard for people to accept that because they think these guys come in and they're supposed to be ready to play right away.
Not a fit.
Usually it's not the case.
Almost always it's not the case.
Right, I think the same thing is very true. Justin's getting an opportunity. I think Justin will be better as he just gets more understanding what the NFL is all about. I absolutely think it's going on with Andre Branch. Andre Branch looked good in training camp. He does not look as good now. Defensive ends and wide receivers and really every position, it can take games. It can sometimes take a season before they figure it out.
I got one from Al. Who's going to cover Megatron?
I would bring in Optimus Prime and hope that Bumblebee could help out underneath maybe.
John didn't see that one either, probably.
I saw it with my son, and I did not fall asleep.
So, interesting thing about, and we'll get into a little more of this coming up when we talk more about Detroit. Megatron is not—he's not transforming as he once did, at least the last couple of weeks.
Well, he's
got one touchdown this year.
Yeah, he does, but he's got a lot of yards.
Same yards and catches are basically what he had last year, but the touchdowns are way down.
He's still okay, Cole.
Oh yeah,
No, I know what you're saying. The Lions are a team that expected a lot of success. They're 3-4, so you have the natural reaction of the media right now up there. They are trying to find a reason why, and a lot of the focus is on, I guess he's had two or three drops in the end zone or balls that he's had his hands on that could have been caught. He's got a little bit of a sore knee from what I understand. My guess is by the end of the season, he's played 7 games. I would guess this is a guy whose numbers will look pretty normal by the end of the season.
Normal
for him.
By his standards.
Right. I mean normal, that there won't be that much of a statistical derivation by the end of the season.
Don tweets in, how much did Mike Thomas miss David Girardi? Seemed to always get him the ball. Resurgence with Stafford, or is he an average wide receiver?
Well, I don't think, you know, from what we've seen of Mike for 4 years, I don't think you could call him above average. I mean, he's... But I do think he's an NFL wide receiver. He showed in 2010 he's capable of catching 800 yards worth of balls, which doesn't put you in the Pro Bowl, but it makes you
serviceable.
It makes you a functional wide receiver in an offense. The Lions throw it around a lot. They're a passing-oriented offense. I do think he did have good timing with Girard.
They also seem to really work well, particularly when plays would break down. They had a good pitch and catch.
That's what David was. He could improvise. He could get you the ball after he made things break down. And maybe that's what Mike was comfortable with, and maybe he finds that in Detroit.
And Rob asks, if M80, Mike Thomas, doesn't drop the touchdown pass this Sunday, does he still get traded? I don't think.
My guess is, yeah. I mean, most of the time, those decisions don't get made. It's easy to say, oh, you have a touchdown pass, let's get rid of him. But usually... front offices don't knee-jerk react quite like that.
Yeah, and especially when you talk about getting a trade mid-season like this.
Yeah, I mean, that would be...
rare. And by the way, today would have been the trade deadline, but because of Sandy, they moved it back to Thursday, so still some time to pull trades if anybody wants to. All right, before we take the break here, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith. Who is his pick as the Scouts' Eye unsung player of the game from Sunday?
Mike Brewster. Mike plugged in at left guard, and he showed tremendous awareness, worked to finish his blocks. He had a good matchup in B.J. Raji, a good part of the game, who's a 340-pound stout run defender, and he held his own.
Getting his first start, and a guy, undrafted player out of Ohio State, has come in, and almost, you know, there have been some times where maybe he's been overpowered by some guys, but he looks like a guy after a summer in the weight room could really be a long-term player on the Jaguars' offensive line.
Yeah, and he's another guy, you know, oftentimes offensive linemen, once they get in the weight room, get stronger and mature a little bit more, you know, he might be a guy who benefits from that.
All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll plug a hole in the ozone. Also, why the Jaguars may be rooting for the 49ers to get an appeal passed on an interesting stat with Alex Smith. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. We'll also talk a bit about the Lions, a little bit more about the Lions who come to town on Sunday. First home game in about a month for the Jaguars. This is Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher. The Jaguars Rewards Program is now better than ever. Season ticket owners get all the great premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, but it's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today. Jaguars may be feeling like they're rooting for the 49ers in one regard. The 49ers are asking the NFL to review the game from Monday night and want to change Alex Smith's passing stats. Now, he didn't throw a lot of passes in that ball game. He was 18 of 19. The 49ers want to change to 19 of 20 because there was a ball that Smith threw to Michael Crabtree behind the line of scrimmage, a play that went down in the stats as a run by Crabtree. They're saying it should have been counted as a complete pass from Smith to Crabtree. And so why is this a big deal for the 49ers? Why is it maybe a big deal for the Jaguars? Well, if he gets that completion, he would have the minimum number of passes to qualify for the highest completion percentage in NFL history. You have to throw at least 20 passes in a game to qualify. The current record is owned by Cardinals quarterback Kurt Warner, who was 24 of 26 back in 2009 in a game here against the Jaguars. That was 92.3% completion percentage. So if Harbaugh gets his wish and gets Alex Smith's stats changed, he'd be 19 for 20, be 95%, and then the Jaguars would be out of first place in terms of having highest passing percentage against them.
Well, let's hope Alex gets that record. He's a deserving kid.
Just a little side note for the record books, how that goes. Okay. A couple of questions that I'll be asking this week in the locker room. John, I want to hear from you as well. One is, how do you cover Calvin Johnson? That's a big question, not only how in terms of strategy and tactics, but who does it?
I can't wait to hear the answer.
Do you think we'll actually get an answer in the locker room when we ask that?
Because that's the kind of question that, you know, usually isn't answered that specifically. But I think the best chance is having Derek Cox healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly your best cover guy, and it would be much like it was fun to watch him cover Brandon Marshall, who caught, I guess, 100 yards worth of balls, but who Derek played very well, and it was fun to watch that matchup because both guys played well. I think it would be fun to watch him cover Calvin Johnson.
I agree. Who most would say is the best receiver in the game. He is, again, his numbers are down a little bit. And just to give you some perspective, the last 2 weeks, as Calvin Johnson's been dealing with his knee injury, he has a total in the last 2 weeks of 6 catches for 80 yards.
Yeah.
In both
games. And those are really the two games that have brought his numbers down. Other than that, he looks very, very good.
Well, there are some of the numbers.
Right.
Again, the numbers in terms of catches and yards are basically what they were last year. Last year he had 10 touchdowns at this point. He has 1 touchdown at this point. And in the first half of both of those games the last 2 weeks, he's been shut out. No catches.
Right.
So,
and that number you just mentioned, 1 is not as many as 10. So that is...
Hang on a second.
That is a drop-off.
One and a square.
I just like to fill that sort of thing in.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you can... I was told there'd be no math, but I'll go ahead and go with you. Detroit, by the way, you mentioned they're 3-4. I don't know what to make of this team, because they were so potent offensively last year. They were so good, and you thought maybe this would be a year where they would move into that upper echelon of teams in the NFC. They've beaten St. Louis, who's
okay.
They've beaten Philadelphia, who is
not okay,
struggling. They've beaten Seattle, whose defense is very okay, but their offense.
They beat them at home. Yeah. So, I mean, they ought to beat Seattle at home.
Agreed. They've lost to San Francisco, who's very good.
Very good.
They've lost to Tennessee, who's just a little below okay.
It was kind of a quirky game that the Titans got. The Titans had like
44-41, I think.
And it was like five or six plays of over 50 yards. That was one of those games that sometimes happen in a season.
They lost to Minnesota,
who was playing very well at the time and seems to now not be.
Right, and they've lost to Chicago, who's terrific.
They may have just come across a patch in their schedule where they had some tough losses. This is a huge game for the Lions because the Jaguars are playing pretty well. In the last couple of games, I say pretty well, and people go crazy about it because you've lost. But they've been competitive, and they're coming home after some bad home games, so you would think that the Jaguars are going to give a powerful punch, if you will. So this is an important game for the Lions. From their perspective, it's a difficult game.
There are three veterans for the Jaguars that I was going to bring up in this game on this show about where is their future. One of them was Mike Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
His future is now in Detroit.
It's in Detroit.
The other two are Eben Britton and Rasheen Mathis. Again, Rasheen, it's tough to say how much of an impact is him coming back very quickly from that injury, and how much of it is the age and wear and tear on him. And then Britton, a guy who's been at right tackle, been at left guard, but now apparently has been supplanted by an undrafted rookie at left guard.
Well, a couple of thoughts. Rasheen, I think clearly he is less than a year away from an ACL. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him a lot in the off season. Everybody you talk to was like, this guy has made a remarkable recovery, remarkable, remarkable, remarkable. But that is a very hard injury to come back off of and be as good or as quick. And I know there's going to be there's people out there who say, oh, he hasn't been good for 2 or 3 years. Well, that's not true. He was good last year. Before he got hurt, he was good last year. So I think a lot of Rasheen has to do with injury, and you kind of tie that in with age. The older you get, the tougher it is to come back off an injury like an ACL. So it's a tough spot for him. Eben, I still wonder if he's completely back off the ankle, completely back off of whatever. And I know he has not played well since he's been back. I wonder if he's completely 100% back, because I don't think that he is a bad player. I'm not sure he's a Pro Bowl player, but I'm not sure he's a bad player. So I wonder how healthy he is, and I honestly don't know the answer to that.
Also, you're talking about a guy who had basically been a tackle his whole life. Right, and now they move him inside. He played a little bit of guard last year, but basically,
make no mistake, Eben's been practicing, so he's healthy.
Yeah,
but there's every guy at this stage of the season has some hurts. I just don't believe Eben Britton is an awful football player.
No, I agree with you. But again, you've got one of the thing. The next step too is, if you want to look down the corridor, is how much longer is Brad Meester going to be playing at a high level? And at some point, for a while there, John Estes was kind of being groomed as the next guy at center. I think now you have to consider that Brewster is in that mix. He was a center in college at Ohio State, and
he's absolutely in the mix.
He may be the heir apparent there, and just the question is, when does the succession plan take place?
What you hope is that both are good, because you want good guys competing for those kind of spots.
All right, that'll do it for Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Tomorrow night, Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. They're live at Latitude 30, and by they, I mean John Osher. Go talk to John about Star Wars. Also be there with Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, Joe Fortunato. Jaguars will take on the Lions on Sunday, 1 o'clock kick, 10 o'clock for the Sunday's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show, back here at Everbank Field for the first time of the month. First of two games in 5 days for the Jaguars, who have a Thursday night affair as well. For John Osher, for Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King, and good night from Jaguar Central.